It's Comedy Week, and we're checking in on the Banana Sock Wizards for showcase number 3. Can this team figure out the formula to make our judges roll in the aisles? Find out on this episode of America's Next Top Podcaster. Welcome to America's Next Top Podcaster. I'm Brian Ibbett. It's Comedy Podcast Week, and the Banana Sock Wizards, Shane, Travis, and Diddy, are getting their jokes together for their entry. We'll listen in on their coaching session with Tom, and we'll end the show with their submission for this week's challenge. But before we get to that, let's talk to Travis about how the team is doing. I'm here with Travis from the Banana Sock Wizards. So glad you guys picked that name. I was really hoping everybody was going to do an amalgamation name, but you know what? I'm glad one team did, and if there was a way I could give you guys extra points for doing it, I would.
Well, it was just the first thing that popped in our head, so we went with it. And we actually thought from talking to you last week that another group might have done the same thing, but
yeah, they were talking about it. One of the other teams one of the ideas that they played around with was going to be that, and they didn't follow through on it. So next time, I'm just going to assign names to people. It's just going to be, I'm going to name the teams.
That works.
Anyway, let's talk about that judging and elimination episode last night. You guys weren't on the top, but you weren't on the bottom, kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. So kind of had our own good, bad, and the ugly last night.
A little bit, yeah. You know, we talked afterwards, and there was a sense amongst the three of us that, you know, we felt bad hearing that Ptolemy was that uncomfortable with the interview. And I get it. We completely understand it. And certainly wouldn't have been a way that we would have done that had we, you know, the actual time and
ability. Right. If it was a real show,
yeah,
you would have reached out to him and said, here's our format and here's how we do things. That's one of the things that I don't even think about as part of this. It's like, all right, well, I give the, you know, when we have a guest come in, I let them know, all right, here's the format, here's what they're going to be doing, and here's their challenge for the week. They're going to ask you questions. But I never think about suggesting that to you. It's like, all right, well, we're going to have somebody in. Make sure to let them know what you guys are going to be doing. And
right. The
interview week is a unique one because it's one of the only times that we pull other people in outside of just the contestants and the judges and stuff. But I mean, but you guys, you know, there was the team, the science podcast that had two interviews in the show. So,
but it was also encouraging when he said, you know, hearing the actual finished interview was not, you know, he didn't mind that. Like, that was a better experience. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes me feel a little bit better in that our idea was sound and under proper execution of that, it would have gone a lot better. But I still think it was overall a really interesting interview. So
yeah, I think so too. And I do like the structure of it. I think that Tom's concerns about the, you know, if they give you a bad, then you're going to prompt them for an ugly and they might be more hesitant to come up with something worse than a bad to talk about, especially if it's something that gets them blackballed in the industry.
But, right. And that was kind of why once we talked to Tom, we immediately thought, well, okay, instead of bad, like what was a bad experience, let's go with characters. And that way we can kind of explore bad in that sense. So
that was a good workaround for that. And the left field of talking about politics, which I know is something that he talks about on his Twitter feed quite a bit, is was welcomed or you know, at least appreciated by the judges as far as like a way to work that in and speak to something that the guest is interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I haven't done a lot of interviews myself, so I was fairly nervous going into it just from the aspect of not having a lot of experience at it. But it was overall was a good experience, and it makes me want to do more of that kind of stuff in the future when I have more time to prepare for it.
Right. Good. Well, very good. Well, that makes me happy to hear, you know, something good coming from this show. Let's talk about this coming challenge week comedy. It's one that everybody just looks forward to, right?
Right.
Everybody's super happy about this.
You know, it's funny because I don't dislike doing comedy. I mean, I did sketch comedy on public access back when I was younger. And so I don't have a problem with that. The tricky part is obviously the shortened time frame and working with people that I haven't worked with in something like a comedy setting before. So, you know, everybody's got different comedic influences and we're throwing around ideas. I mean, we have something that's sort of a best in show type of an idea going on.
Okay. I like that.
So, you know, I have a couple of other ideas of some things that, that I think would be fun. We're just right now we're hashing all that out. But it's interesting. And like I say, I enjoy doing comedy, so I'm not great at it, which means I have to work at it a lot harder. So
I would think that, I mean, of everybody on your team and maybe even everybody in this last group of nine, you've probably got the most experience. I mean, having done a sketch comedy show, which sketch comedy in and of itself has to be shorter bite-sized pieces. Mm-hmm. You're not working on a 30-minute sitcom or a, you know, a two-hour-long comedy film. You've got to keep it in that kind of Saturday Night Live style, small chunk to make it, to sell it and also to fit the parameters of the show.
Right. Yeah. No, I just, I have a, I usually played either like a completely outlandishly wild character when we would do it, or I would play the straight. So, but you know, it's all, comedy's all chemistry, right? So
it is. Yes.
That's where, like, for me, it's just, I have to feel out and Shane and Don and I all have to kind of do that and get the rhythm down and get the cadence down and find a common form of comedy that we want to do. And audio comedy can be a lot harder because, you know, a lot of the things I, my brain immediately went to are visual based gags that we have to somehow, if we're going to work that in, have to figure out a way to make it work with audio. So
for sure. Yeah. That's a big hurdle is that, you know, thinking you're going to do something like Chris Hardwick's Talking Dead is great if you make sure that the things that you rely on aren't visual.
Yeah.
Visual jokes. So yeah, that's a very good point, especially the fact that the TV show, the fake TV show that you're recapping is a visual thing. It's right there in the name. It's a television show. So
yeah. And that's a nice little wrinkle you threw in there. like it's not enough that it has to be comedy, but we also have to do based on a fictional show. So
yes.
That like, that's probably the linchpin of everything is the show within a show has to be that, that concept has to work. And if we can get that to work, then I think the review of that show podcast format can kind of rise out of that. But it's finding and hammering that down. That's for me the most difficult part.
And I think that the rather than looking at it as, oh my God, one extra thing, I do want you to look at it as, all right, Brian has given us something that we can use as the fuel for the comedy. Right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So it's good. Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you appreciate as much as I
want you to appreciate it. It's an extra wrinkle and it is extra fuel for it. It's just,
it's
first
extra
it's
work.
Like, oh, really? But no, and you're right. It is.
Right. Yeah.
But, but I relish that, you know, it's, this has been, this whole competition for me so far has been great because it's putting me in situations that I normally wouldn't be in on my own to work a little more at some of this part of the craft. And that's good. I need that. So, and I know from talking with Shane and Don, like, I think all three of us kind of like that part of it. I don't want to speak too much for them, but we've had some pretty good stuff going back and forth in our Discord channel so far.
Oh, good. Okay. Excellent. Well, then I'm excited to hear what, number one, what you guys come up with, but I'm excited to be able to listen in this week on the Tom call coaching session and see what he tells you as well.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I know Tom is a very funny guy. And
he is.
His style of humor works really well for, I don't know, it's hard to explain. He's got a very dry sense of humor, which I appreciate.
He does.
And I think given sort of the avenue that we want to go down, I think he might have some really good insight into that and he might like it.
Good. Yeah, I think that's a great perspective because dry wit and, you know, not doing anything kind of slapsticky or over the top, I think is the way to do well in this challenge. So great. Well, It's going to be a fun listen. I know Tom is going to have a blast helping all three teams come up with some finalization on their ideas and concepts. So I'm excited for this week a lot.
I honestly am too.
Very good. All right. Well, Travis, thank you so much. Good luck.
Thanks.
Tom Merritt had some good advice for our team. Let's listen.
How you feeling?
Feeling okay.
That's good. That's good.
This week sucks.
Do you guys, yeah. We don't have to talk about last week at all. It's up to you. You can ask questions about last week or we can just focus on next week.
Oh, I think we'd sort of like to get your feedback from last week.
So let me pull up Banana Sock Wizard. I want to see what the judges said too.
I'll give you extra time too. I'll give you an extra
a few extra seconds. Might be the this is the one. This is one where Scott actually kind of liked what you guys did, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This also was. I'm pulling up what the judges said didn't help me much because all Jenny did was pick on production elements. I thought you nailed it on good, bad, ugly, and avoiding the things that I was worried about. I really liked where you went with bad. I really liked where you went with ugly. I think Scott's not wrong about the, you know, pulling in political is risky, but it is of the moment. It's something he was obviously passionate about. And I thought you got some really good nuggets out of him with your questions. And so, you know, I think maybe they dinged you a little bit just on pacing or something. It's also really difficult when you all three are interviewing the same person to differentiate, because you're getting different things out of him, but you're all interviewing the same guy, right? So it's the same flavor for a large part of it. But mostly, I was pleasantly surprised that good, bad, and that bad and ugly particularly turned out as well as it did. I thought it turned out really well.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. that brings us back up a little bit.
Yeah.
good. Well, what are you thinking for this week?
So,
idea.
Yeah, we have a bunch of different ideas. Okay. And we're hoping maybe you can help us narrow them down.
Sure.
So we kind of started with the idea of an MXC style show or something, which turned into this best in show or cat show type of thing. We even wrote out a script for that kind of a thing. But then we got worried that it wasn't going to meet the criteria exactly. If we were doing a more of a play-by-play rather than a recap of a show.
Okay.
So we were going to we were going to parody the Westminster Dog Show and have it, you know, like I think we called it the Canterbury Cat Show or something like that.
We
were going to describe it.
Right. So you need it to be a recap of the Westminster Dog Show. That would be fun.
Yeah, and that's what we were going to do.
Yeah.
And we had some ridiculous.
Well, tell me your ridiculous ideas.
Yeah, but Mrs. Piddles was really funny.
And initially I wrote something out that had him doing more gymnastics style things or something crazy like that. But and then Don came in and started making more cat-like types of elements. But so that was one idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then so Travis, did you want to talk about the other idea you had?
Well, one thing that I thought would be kind of interesting was the review of a show is done by asking questions about the show. Like we ask the same questions every week, or we poke fun at the, you know, try to predict the tropes that the show is going to use from week to week.
Okay.
So because, you know, if you do say like a sci-fi type show, there's a lot of, even the good ones have a lot of the same tropes get reused over and over. So my thought was something along those lines of, you know, we try to predict and then recap. Okay, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? Let's try to guess for the next episode.
Cool. Are there more topic ideas? I'm holding my comments on all of these till the end.
Yeah. Okay, great. And then we started getting into some crazy talks of like a, what do we do? Like a crazy death race sort of style thing. Yeah, what else you guys got here?
Like a Death Race TV, like a reality show kind of.
Yeah, yeah, like there was a reality show like Death Race 2000, and then we would after the race was over, we would, you know,
talk about the race, maybe
talk about the race and what happened, and interview one of the guys, and he wouldn't be able to talk because he was on life support, that kind of thing.
So you've got two show recap idea, like two shows to recap, and then you've got one structural idea about how to recap it. So I'm tempted to want to say, like, well, use the asking questions about the show and predictions for one of your show ideas. And the Death Race one fits closer in. What if it's not in fact a reality show, but a science fiction show? I mean, it's great. You could have it be, you know, Death Race Pet Show, where it's a science fiction about, you know, dogs who compete to be the best at a death race in space. That's the kind of thing you want to do, though. You want to push it. You want to push it farther. So you're doing stuff that people don't expect. But I really do like the asking questions bit. That is going to be a different structure than you would normally have from a recap show. And that's going to set it apart. So that's good. I like that idea of, you know, having these fake, well, last week we thought this would happen. We were right about this. We were wrong about that. Next week, I'm thinking this is going to happen. That's going to happen. So then it's just a matter of picking what show you want it to be about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there any other topics you guys in particular wanted to ask them about?
Yeah, because some of the different show types we were thinking of were, you know, like there's superhero shows and maybe a sitcom, a talk show, a crime drama. I thought a crime drama might be funny because we could say, okay, our running body count is, you know, 237. And in this episode, there are four more. So, you know, it's going up to, you know, 241. That type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing you might do in a regular recap show of not parody. So what you want to do is turn these tropes on their heads. And so the you know, if you could do a the body count in the period romance show, like that's the kind of thing that's going to make people,
there you go.
You know, okay, yeah. That's going to make people pay notice. Mm. Body count in a crime drama is like, that's exactly what I would expect, right? Not surprised. But not even
body
necessarily
count
funny.
Downton Abbey is something different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or we could have, like, if we do the Death Race Pets, we could, you know, have like the romantic interest.
That could work too with the scrap iron chef thing we were talking about.
Yeah.
There was another one, yeah.
Was a cooking show.
Like a cooking competition show recap, but then take a bunch of like sci-fi show tropes and work those in.
Now you're talking, right? Sci-fi tropes in a cooking show with a death count.
yeah, that's pretty good. Dude, we've just been all over the place with this one. Did anything sort of jump out at you the most of what we've kind of talked about, Tom?
Cooking show reality in space with a death count. Like I'm not even joking. Like it made you all laugh, right? So you you can go too crazy, you can go too silly, and you want to realize when you're out too far away from the shore and pull back. But most people won't take it far enough. They'll be a little too cautious. So the you know two things is push yourself farther, come up with a bunch of ideas and reject most of them, but keep coming up with ideas until you're all like, oh, that's good, and then also. Make sure that you're not doing what's expected, you know, make sure that you're like, you're combining things and turning tropes on their head and adding things that shouldn't be together. That's good fodder for comedy.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. Cause that's completely like the opposite of what we were thinking. Cause when we were talking about the cat show, I think what we had was good, but we had one segment and then we were like, well, it's going to get really old.
Yeah. And that's what that's exactly the right way to go about it is ideas don't have to be good to be bad to die. You might have a good idea. It's just not right. Or it's not, there's not enough in there or it's not unexpected enough. So keep coming up with them. The worst thing is to think like, I have to come up with the right idea right now. You want is bulk. You want to just brainstorm as many ideas as possible and then be able to look at them and go, okay, that's a gem, or even pull from a couple of them and put them together. The other thing you want to focus on is production, because whatever you end up being as your show, you want to have really good sounding excerpts so that, because that's going to be a big part of the entertainment. It's a great way to impress the judges and show off your production skills. So make sure you layer these sounds and put background noise and know that Jenny's going to be listening for every edit pop and everything in there. So you want to make it sound nice and smooth, but that's another way to hedge if like, maybe a bit doesn't land or you think it's funnier than they think, which just happens. If you've got really good production elements, that's going to help bring you back up a little bit too.
And I think we've got with Shane especially, we have a good advantage there.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right. I like it.
What else you got?
I like it. You want to hear about Mrs. Piddles?
Mrs. Piddles. I can never get enough about Mrs. Piddles.
So I wrote this whole thing about the curtain rod balance beam act, and it was about Mrs. Piddles and how she did her balance beam act, but she stopped in the middle for a five lick hind flank licking session that was first time ever done in competition.
That's time. But it was actually, you know, right after you're saying a five lick, and I didn't want to interrupt there and leave. Let's listen in on their work sessions.
Show, because Japanese game shows, I don't know if you've ever watched any of them, they're insane. They are some crazy stuff.
Oh, they are. They're stupid.
What and if so it was... The whole thing with MXC was they were making fun of just the show's premise in general. Mm-hmm. And so they would basically make up these just ridiculous teams of like, you know, the, it'd be something like, sex workers versus meatpacking plant people.
Right.
And those were the two teams. And then they would make up, you know, cheesy backstories for everybody.
Something after we agree on what it's going to be for sure. But I mean, like, what other animals?
I do like turtles just because it would be like the slowest show ever. It's why the
it
show
would
is
be.
Still on the air.
It would be.
We started the 50-yard dash last June, and
But here's the thing.
Almost wrapped up.
Here's the thing. If we did turtles, to me, turtles alone isn't interesting enough. Or I don't think there's enough. In fact, I think it would actually be on the more boring side of things to be talking about that. But
that sort of concerns me about cats too.
Well, okay. So here's a question: does it have to be one specific animal?
That's what I was gonna go with. It could be all sorts. In fact, that might even be more interesting.
Star Trek Discovery, because that's really the thing. Is like, okay, is the show? So if we go with the animal competition show, like the sort of parody of Westminster Dog Show,
yeah,
is that show the ridiculous part, or is
no.
our recap of that show?
I think it's the ridiculous part? I think it's the recap, in my opinion.
So if that's the case, then having it be something like Cats, where they're just going completely, you know, the show itself can't really be a parody. Like, it has to be a straight, you know, the cats are actually doing the competition.
Right.
And then we're going crazy about what they're doing.
Right.
Which makes that a lot tougher, in my opinion. We want the show within the show to be a good idea, but we don't have to fully flesh out what that show is. We just have to flesh out enough to make our reactions to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be the type of thing where we're poking fun at, I don't know, like the Captain Kirkness of whoever's there. And, you know, oh, what color skin did the alien girl have that he made out with this week? Yeah, this is a tricky one.
So,
no, this one sucks.
Yeah, I mean, they all kind of suck, I guess, but
no, comedy is the worst. Comedy is absolutely the worst.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of different from previous weeks because I think this is deciding on a topic is going to take up the entire Tom time. Aside from him maybe giving us some quick feedback from last week. But I think we say boom, 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 boom. These are our ideas. And then we'll probably be at time at that point if he gives us a, you know, best response.
But I think then once we kind of have a direction to go in, I mean, my experience with doing sketch comedy has always been that it takes that spark. Once you get that idea going, everything just sort of flows.
Yeah.
And that was some sound from last week of an incident that got Billy Joe Cathode a 1 minute starting line penalty for this week. Welcome back to If You Can't Stand the Heat, where we discuss and analyze your favorite reality show, Culinary Drift. As always, we go over all the action from the world's favorite cooking challenge, Death Race. For those of you who have never seen the show before, here's a quick refresher. And seriously, have you been living under a rock? It starts with a vehicle-based race to acquire the ingredients for the weekly challenge dish. Next, they must prepare the dish in an undisclosed location, replete with danger. And lastly, they must present the dish to the judges by making their way through a diabolical, and possibly lethal, obstacle course. Please note that contestants must complete and survive each challenge to move on to the next. This week is always one of the fan favorites. Yes, folks, it's Roadkill Week. Here to go over all the action that took place is Stone Daly.
Thank you, Biff, and as always, I'm joined by my trusty sidekick, Chesterfield McMillan.
Well, hello, Stone. Long time no see, old friend.
We just recorded last week.
Hey, we're going to have to agree to disagree there, buddy.
We did see a slight rule change to this season's Roadkill Challenge for the shopping round. Each team must acquire their roadkill during the race. However, they are no longer required to use their own vehicle to do so. Its death must still be a product of the race. This rule was specifically put in place after a contestant bought their roadkill from a roadside stand last season. As usual, the roadkill cannot be human. Strays and animals with no tags are allowed at the sole discretion of the judges. Extra points can be awarded for the speed or size of the animal acquired at the end of the race. The start went off without a hitch this week, which in and of itself is unusual. Even Billy Joe served his penalty without incident, although Katrina Canterbury's long-haired man Swoon, a feisty feline with a pure to cure and all-around mischief partner Mrs. Piddles, did use Johann Jingleheimer Schmidt's van as a litter box again. That makes 4 weeks in a row that she's used another competitor's vehicle as her own personal litter box, and that's two for Johann, or as most of the fans know him as, Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny wasn't too happy about it either, since he didn't notice, and it was in the front driver's seat.
So let's get to some of the action. Early in the race, there was not a whole lot going on as the competitors were feeling each other out a bit. The typical trading of paint and exchanging of gunfire and that one self-propelled grenade launched at the Braun and McFeely team by Newt Farmer and tractor construction worker Carl Jones, but for the most part, it was pretty quiet.
True. There was a good amount of ammunition and ordnance used, but most of the carnage was around the race and not directly in it.
And that's the moment everyone has been talking about on Flitter during the show. Marcus the Monster Mayweather plowed his monster truck Bone Beast into the back of a semi carrying 32 tons of Stay Puffed Marshmallow.
Well, that sure turned into...
Chester, don't!
A sticky situation.
This accident came about when Mira Von Peters, the heiress to the Von Peters estate, flashed him from the sunroof of her Tesla. The accident involved 22 cars, 3 road signs, the semi, of course, and a lone cow, which happened to be grazing at the side of the road. Mira was allowed to gather a bucket full of marshmallow, along with whatever beef she could salvage. The crash extends our streak to 37 races with at least one fatality. Chester, you predicted last week that the streak would hold up.
Yep, called that one for sure. Can't say I blame Mayweather for getting distracted, though, eh?
It certainly paid off for Mira, as she came in third this week and got bonus points for directly taking out an opponent. Not all eliminations are performed with weapons.
I don't know, Stone. She might be able to register those as weapons.
I'm not going near that one, Chester. Our winner this week, though, was Francois N. Stein, who goes by Frankie. He did an excellent job of dodging and surviving a late rocket barrage attack from Spike to cross the finish line first. He's definitely in the driver's seat, going into the cooking challenge, seeing as how he is a French chef by trade.
Do we know what Spike's last or real name is?
Nope, he's never said, and I'm not about to ask him. Coming in second was Johann in his souped-up VW bus, but they made him park behind the viewing stands because of the smell.
I heard Mrs. Piddles was seen headed that way after the race.
Poor Johann. Here's a quick bit of the post-race interview with the winner.
Did you see what that tried to f***ing do to me? F***ing rockets, I'll f***ing kill him next race, I will.
Wow, Can he say that on air?
Well, he did. But moving on to the cooking round, we saw the return of the Foundry.
I know. I was surprised they went back to that location this year. I mean, after what happened in season 4.
Now, you know that legally we aren't allowed to talk about that, Chester. That NDA is in place for a reason. Let's just move on, okay? So cooking in an active Foundry is one thing.
There's certainly enough heat sources.
Very true. But this particular Foundry is also a working junkyard, complete with a couple of big bull mastiffs roaming the grounds. A new twist this time around was to have the contestants use only items they could find on the junkyard grounds for cooking.
Well, that'll certainly help to avoid another...
Careful there, Chester. Ixnay on the NDA.
Sorry. It was just such a vivid memory.
I know, but let's get back to what we saw out of the cooking round. The top three from the round got their head start, and Frankie wasted no time in putting his skills as a classically trained chef to work. He managed to fashion a cooktop out of an old grill and a Ford Pinto and started working on his kangaroo ratatouille.
Wait, where the heck did he find a kangaroo?
Not sure, but the judges have allowed it. That's a safe choice of dish given his French background.
In this place, nothing is really safe, Stone. You of all people should know that.
That's true. It was nice to see the twins Johnny and Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt working together to try and get to that final round. All in all, I was pretty surprised by how little carnage we saw in this round. I really expected to have someone's cooking station explode.
Well, we almost lost somebody to the incinerator, though. I mean, it was a smart idea by Spike to try and flash fry the venison he had, but it almost ended in disaster. And I'm not talking about overcooked meat here.
I'm sure he's regretting getting that close to the incinerator with that long beard of his. Well, it was a long beard anyway.
Yeah. That's a smell he won't forget soon.
And this was a new tactic. Mrs. Piddles built up some liquid courage and sabotaged one of the dishes.
That was quite the litter lob, but it sure paid off.
Well, we saw all 11 remaining contestants advance to the final round this week. That is the largest number we've seen in quite some time. Not a lot of variety in the food choices, though.
Yeah, we had a lot of Cajun dishes this time around.
Those were just burnt by the faulty equipment.
Yeah, Cajun.
And you wonder why we can't go back to New Orleans.
But, you know, hey, having 11 people advance to the final round sure did make for an interesting race to the finish for sure. Speaking of which, let's now move on to the food delivery portion of the games.
Yes, to finish off the competition, we of course have round 3, the delivery round.
You know, the scenery in this canyon is truly beautiful this time of year.
Right you are, Chester. Towards the beginning, we saw a bit of a Carl Jones sandwich with the Jingleheimer Schmidt twins boxing him in. That was when Frankie decided to make a push on the outside.
Wasn't there something special about this track?
Oh! The normal pit traps were replaced by active landmines this week, apparently as a push to up the intensity of the final round. Personally, I'm not a fan. I think there's enough danger to this whole thing already.
Well, I mean, it did help in determining a winner, that's for sure.
You're not wrong about that. Just not the way I would have done it. So for those that are concerned about the well-being of our French chef Francois, be concerned no more. He is out of the competition. Permanently.
We all need to surrender at some point.
Following closely behind Jacob at this point was an up-and-comer Freddy Falcon. We haven't heard from this guy yet.
No, we have not, but let's hear what he had to say about his first time at the games.
Yeah, I was all stoked for doing this whole race thing. I totally, like, came in here all being all fast and shiz. Check out this wicked scar from the minefield.
His first appearance on the show was also his last. Just after that mid-race interview, he turned back to blow a kiss at Spike in a rather impressive taunt before slipping on the trail and landing face first onto a long needle cactus.
Ouch! Kid was my dark horse, too.
This is right around where they began their ascent up the volcano.
Wait, it was a volcano, too?
Did you and I watch the same show? Mira Von Peters was showing some promise on the tales of Freddy after surviving the minefield. If only she knew what was in store for her next.
That's not all. She's showing. And what do you mean by what's in? Oh, wait. Oh, it's coming back to me now.
Once they reached the peak, things were about to get ugly. Another change to the course from last time, with the tightrope having been upgraded to a rope bridge.
F***ing OSHA.
And that's when Billy Joe Cathode came out of nowhere and collided with Mira, sending them both flailing, Gollum-style, to their doom.
How precious. I started to wonder if anyone's going to make it to the end this week. I mean, things got pretty crazy during the unicycle race along the volcano's edge.
Indeed it did, Chester. Have you ever tried to ride a unicycle while carrying a hot casserole dish? I'm not at all shocked that we lost a couple of competitors there. It's part of why I thought the minefield was too much. We knew the volcano run was coming, and in the end, we saw only one contestant and two completed dishes make it to the judges' table.
And just when the judges thought they'd have a full slate of meals.
I don't think they were missing out on much. Roadkill Week is never my favorite, favorite when it comes to the meals. It also means that by default, we have a winner this week. Katrina Canterbury and her cat, Mrs. Piddles, have proven to be this week's best culinary drifters.
Bon appetit, Madame Piddles.
That was If You Can't Stand the Heat, the comedy podcast entry from Banana Sock Wizards. Our next episode will be the judging and elimination show, as the judges crown a winner for this difficult week, and two of our contestants get yanked off the stage by one of those shepherd hook things, you know, like vaudeville. All this and more next time on America's Next Top Podcaster.